Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Kidney Compass. My name is Brendan Nguyen and we're here from Yokohama, Japan. And we're here with a very special guest, David Cherney, great friend from Toronto. David, it's great to have you here today. And as many of you will know, David is a real leader in the field in diabetes complications and has done hugely pivotal and influential work. And I've looked up to David for a long time for many professional but also personal reasons. And super awesome to have you here, David.
So first of all, I'm gonna come onto your podcast every day because it's so flattering and nice. Thank you. It's great to be here. Thank you for the invitation. And I'm looking forward to discussing what's going on here at the World Congress of Nephrology.
Great. So yesterday, David, you presented some data from REMODEL, really important study, semaglutide in patients with diabetes and kidney disease. For our listeners who haven't heard about REMODEL yet, the primary paper is not yet published. Tell us about the study, why it was important to do, and some of the key findings, and also what you reported yesterday.
Yeah, so the REMODEL trial was meant to be sort of a companion mechanistic trial to complement the data from the FLOW trial. And if we sort of back up to the FLOW trial for a second first, the FLOW trial was performed in just over 3,500 patients with type 2 diabetes and kidney disease with albuminuria and designed to understand the effects on reducing cardiorenal risk in people with type 2 diabetes and essentially showed reductions in the cardiorenal primary outcome, reductions in the risk of losing kidney function, so slope, a reduction in MACE, a reduction in cardiovascular death, and in all-cause mortality. So the big question from the FLOW trial, and indeed from other studies with GLP-1 receptor agonists, was why? Why is there a benefit in the kidney? And there were lots of analyses from other trials essentially suggesting that the benefits are largely, if not exclusively, independent of traditional risk factors like body weight reduction and A1C reduction and blood pressure lowering. And so then the question was, is there an effect within the kidney? Is there an intrarenal effect that could potentially underlie these kidney protective effects and maybe also speak to some of the cardiovascular mechanisms leading to reductions in cardiovascular risk? So that's where the REMODEL trial kind of comes in. And the REMODEL trial was designed to understand the why question and was undertaken in just over 100 patients and was presented at the ASN last year, so in 2025. And so there are two essentially design papers and baseline characteristic papers, which you can look for and review. I'll just talk about the trial itself and what the trial showed. And so this trial was designed to understand the why question, and the primary outcome was around MRI-based measures of oxygenation, because at the time that the trial was designed, we thought that a lot of the benefit with semaglutide may be around preserving oxygenation, reducing ischemia in the kidney, thereby reducing risk and fibrosis over time. And that was the primary outcome. And then we had a variety of clinical secondary outcomes and mechanistic secondary outcomes. So clinical outcomes around kidney function loss over a year, because this was a 52-week trial, albuminuria, blood pressure, A1C, and body weight. And then we had a variety of other mechanistic outcomes, so measures of kidney fibrosis, so a measure called apparent diffusion coefficient, which is a surrogate marker of fibrosis. We also had measures of perirenal and hilar fat within the kidney, because we thought that may be one of the factors linked with benefits. And then a variety of blood and urine biomarkers. And we also had 33 patients as part of the total cohort who underwent kidney biopsies at baseline and after a year. So the trial essentially showed that there was no effect on oxygenation, but there was a significant effect on reducing perirenal and hilar fat, which was disproportionately reduced compared to the small reduction in body weight. We also showed a reduction in the apparent diffusion coefficient, which is this marker of kidney fibrosis. And we also showed a reduction in albuminuria of around 40%. And from the biopsy perspective, we showed that there were effects on endothelial cells and effects on specifically glomerular endothelial cells, and a reduction in markers of inflammation, especially natural killer cells, which are one of the species of white cells that are linked with kidney tubulointerstitial disease and fibrosis. So the overall idea, in terms of a summary of all that data, because that's a lot of data, is that there are probably effects on reducing fat within the kidney that in turn likely feeds back and has an effect on endothelial cells and inflammatory pathways within the kidney, which in turn reduces markers of kidney injury, especially albuminuria, and may lead to a preservation of kidney architecture, especially preventing the risk of progression of fibrosis. So that's the overall sort of data that we have so far that was presented at the ASN. And what we presented at this meeting at the World Congress was the SGLT2 inhibitor subgroups. So people who either were or were not on an SGLT2 inhibitor at baseline. And what we showed is that essentially the benefits are consistent across people who were or were not taking an SGLT2 inhibitor at baseline, suggesting that the benefits with semaglutide mechanistically are additive on top of whatever an SGLT2 inhibitor is doing, probably mainly hemodynamics and other related mechanisms. The benefits are probably largely independent of what an SGLT2 inhibitor does, which is in line with what we do in practice, which is that we would, you know, use all these medications in combination. And this provides somewhat of a mechanistic rationale for using these layers of therapy to target additional pathways. So we think that the SGLT2 inhibitors probably are reducing glomerular hypertension. And in contrast, a GLP-1 receptor agonist, for example, is reducing a lot of the endothelial and inflammatory burden that type 2 diabetes is linked with in the kidney. So that's a very quick summary of all, a whole bunch of work. And that's what we think is likely going on in terms of the effect of semaglutide.
This is great because in many ways, the story is so consistent now across the mechanistic data, the clinical trial data, the real world evidence that probably these two classes of agents have independent and additive effects, and we should be using them in combination in high risk individuals. And I think your study and REMODEL gives us really important insights from the mechanistic point of view. David, I mean, this is now opinion, we're in the area of opinions now, but what do you think about the role of perinephric fat is in kidney disease? I gave a talk earlier today on heart failure and CKD, and heart failure cardiologists tend to think a lot about venous pressure, much more than we do in terms of development and progression of kidney disease. I just wonder whether or not the perinephric fat story and this kind of kidney tamponade from an adiposity point of view is an under-recognized mechanism by which patients living with overweight and obesity develop kidney disease. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. And so the theory would go along these kind of lines, that there is perirenal fat that can compress the kidney, thereby causing like a miniature Paige kidney, that kind of idea. Exactly. And that there may also be fat in the hilum, which can compress the vasculature, so potentially raising renal artery resistive index. And we also showed a reduction in renal artery resistive index, by the way, I forgot to mention that before. And could also, this hilar fat could also compress the venous vasculature, the renal vein, which could, so both together, sort of ischemia plus a blockade of venous drainage could cause an effect within the kidney, which could lead to kidney injury, intraglomerular hypertension, ischemia, all these kind of different physiological injury pathways. And so that's absolutely possible. And we are going to do a bunch of additional analyses to understand the relationship between these changes in fat and some of the other physiological outcomes that we have, physiological parameters that we have. And the other potential interaction may not just be one that's sort of mechanical. It could also be this idea of toxic adiposity and having all this extra fat that's sitting at the hilum and or sitting around the kidney, which could not just be sort of inert, metabolically inactive, innocent fat. It could lead to the promotion of injury pathways around the elaboration of cytokines and chemokines, which in turn leads to inflammation and fibrosis. So the fat itself, outside and exclusive to any mechanical effects, compressive effects, could also have additional pro-inflammatory, pro-fibrotic mechanisms, which when reduced could in turn lead to some of the benefits that we saw around preservation of fibrosis levels with semaglutide versus placebo, where fibrosis seemed to progress more rapidly with placebo. So I think there are a couple of ways where the fat may be of importance.
Really, really interesting, and thanks for those important insights. You know, based on what you found in Remodel, again, asking you to stare into your crystal ball and guess, but to what extent do you think some of these mechanisms may be relevant in non-diabetic kidney disease? You know, we only have evidence from flow in diabetic nephropathy, but huge evidence gap for incretin-based therapies in people with non-diabetic kidney disease, particularly those who are overweight and obese. What do you think the mechanisms could be? We saw last year, Hirspink presented data, a study that you were also involved in, I think, showing albuminuria reductions. Do you think these mechanisms that you observed in Remodel might apply to non-diabetic kidney disease?
Yeah, so I think that's sort of the key question. And I think there are two very obvious correlates that come out of the Remodel trial and the mechanistic observations. One is exactly like you say, these are intrarenal effects on endothelial cells and inflammatory pathways that are very likely to be relevant for people without diabetes. This doesn't appear to be a glucose-related thing. So there's a very high likelihood that this could be relevant for non-diabetic kidney disease. And as you mentioned, in the SMART trial in 100 patients with non-diabetic CKD, there was a 52% reduction in ACR with high-dose semaglutide compared to placebo, suggesting at least the same kind of albuminuria lowering effect in people who don't have hyperglycemia. Those patients still did have overweight and obesity. Their BMI had to be 27 and higher to get into the SMART trial. So it doesn't mean that it's independent of adiposity-related pathways, but it seems to be independent of glucose. And so accordingly, I think it's very important to think about how we can do trials in this space in people with non-diabetic kidney disease. The other obvious clinical application of the Remodel trial is a message for patients. And that message is that even if patients don't have obesity, if they don't have hyperglycemia, but they have type 2 diabetes and they have CKD, there are direct effects of these medications within the kidney. So this is a kidney medicine in terms of the effects that we saw in the Remodel trial, which makes it so important to think about using them even in patients who have decent glycemic control or don't have necessarily an issue with overweight or obesity. And so I often will have patients say to me, you know, oh my, you know, why are you telling me to be on semaglutide? Isn't semaglutide an obesity drug for people who have poor blood sugar control? And the answer is no, that the effects are on your blood vessel cells and on cells that cause inflammation in your kidneys that can then cause you to lose function over time. And that's a really serious, important factor to target with medications like this. And that's a benefit that seems to be independent of whatever's going on metabolically with you. So that's an important message for patients to try to understand and help them understand why these medications are so important, how they're distinct from other medicines they may be on, like an ACE or ARB, like an SGLT2, like a non-steroidal MRA, and that the benefits are distinct and different, and that they have these unique effects that can help to reduce risk. So there are a couple of important messages clinically that I think we can take home and use in our clinics.
Brilliant. Well, thanks so much, David, for all of those insights and all of the work you have done and continue to do. We've benefited so much in terms of our understanding of how these therapies work from everything that you and your group have done. So thank you very much for being here today and being a great collaborator and friend as well.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So that's it for another episode of Kidney Compass. Thanks everyone for joining us from Yokohama in Japan. And please check out our other episodes from the Congress summarizing some of the great data that's been presented. You can follow our podcast wherever you get them online. And we look forward to speaking and interacting with you very shortly.